This is from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 10. These 12 Jesus sent out, charging them, "Go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and preach as you go, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven is at hand.' Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons. You received without pay, give without pay. Take no gold, nor silver, nor copper in your belts, no bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor a staff, for the laborer deserves his food. And whatever town or village you enter, find out who's worthy in it, and stay with them until you depart. And as you enter the house, salute it, and if the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet and you, as you leave that house or town." Well, this is the long version of the Great Commission: go therefore and make disciples of all nations. And there's a lot of detail in it. Travel light, move around, and an exit strategy. I think that's kind of interesting. If people don't listen, if they will not receive you, shake off the dust and move on. In other words, keep working until it stops working, and then figure something else out. Sounds easy. Shake the dust off your feet, right? It's all you got to do. Except, sometimes we need new shoes, because things stop working that paralyze us. Things stop working in relationships, friendships, families. Things stop working on the job. Things stop working in our health and wellness. And it takes a little bit, not just to shake the dust off, but to find new ways of moving, find new ways of walking. So I want to slow that process down a little bit between the time when it's working, it's not working, and then moving forward. When it's not working, or when it stops working, is an opportunity to learn. And I want to talk about the learning that ultimately moves us forward, that shakes off the dust, maybe gives us a new pair of shoes, and helps us take that first step toward working it out again. I think when it stops working, it's an opportunity to learn something about ourselves. And learning something about ourselves is not easy. We were talking this week in one of my classes about the fairly obvious statistic that all people who are currently in their first marriages have a lower divorce rate, when you just look at them, than people who are currently in their second or subsequent marriages. Just a statistical reality. For some, it's simply the next marriage is an opportunity to continue doing more of what didn't work, and the outcome doesn't change. But it's also an opportunity to learn something about yourself. I tell my students, you remember how heartbroken you were when you were in eighth grade and your first steady boyfriend or girlfriend dumped you? That was good news, because you learned something of what you need in a relationship. And you learned something, perhaps, about what that person was unable to provide. So through, subsequently, a set of ruthless self-examination, you can figure out how the next step will move you in a direction more toward where your needs are met. A psychologist named William Glasser and his wife, Carlene, wrote a little book that I've sometimes given to prospective marrieds called Getting Together and Staying Together. And the upshot of this is I would use the word, ruthless self-examination of what you need in a relationship and what potentially the other person can provide and what you can provide for them. They argue that there are five, essentially, basic needs that all of us have. It follows somewhat Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The first one is survival. And by that, they mean some level of, if not material comfort or wealth, but material sufficiency. So how do you make that work? And if you have a high need for that, well, that's something that the two of you should work out in terms of, it's the money question, sort of at the basis of it. Love and belonging. How strong are each of your needs for having someone in your life that truly loves you, not if, but anyway, and that even when you're at your nastiest, is willing to take you back in. How strong is that need? Power is a word that sometimes frightens people in relationships, but what it means is not only the ability to set a goal and achieve it, but also people have their power needs met mostly through respect. So to what extent do you find respect in the relationship you have, or how might you find it again if it's lacking? Freedom is a sense of autonomy, simply being able to exercise and orchestrate the details of your day with some level of freedom, given and granted and shared one with another. And they say the easiest. I'm not sure that that's always the case, because we have to make room for this. How high is your need for fun? That's an interesting question. But the point is, everybody has all of these needs, but to varying degrees. And so the question is, how well does that mesh? Well, that requires a level of ruthless self-examination. It also requires a level of acknowledgement that, you know, neither one of us are bad people, but this was a bad fit. So how do you move forward? You recognize, acknowledge, and both admit your strengths and limits, and move toward finding someone else whose strengths and limits fits with you. When it stops working, learn more about you. Secondly, I think when it stops working, learn more, or maybe relearn or learn again, and hold on to for dear life something about God. Sometimes the things that stop working in our lives stop working because we busted them. Intentionally, inadvertently, couldn't prevent it. And if I think the church, with its opportunity, but also the Bible more than anything else, especially the New Testament, teaches the reality of that wonderful hymn, there's a wideness in God's mercy like the wideness of the sea. The love of God is broader than the measures of our mind. We can't fully imagine how willing God is to hold on to us, to not abandon us, even when, well, we've pretty well busted it ourselves. Now, there's a wide range of levels of rigidity and acceptance within Christianity. And there are some, acknowledgeably, and I'm free to acknowledge, that need maybe more rigidity with their religion than I do. I mean, we have 10 commandments for a reason. They become a guideline for life. Jesus in the New Testament recasts it, love God and love neighbor. There's only two. We have the golden rule, treat others as you wish to be treated. And there are people who hold on to that and use it as a kind of barometer. So the rigidity to flexibility spectrum has at least a point where some people need to be. Christian fundamentalism would be an example of that. Now, I think there are limits to rigidity. When rigidity becomes extremism, I think we have to go to the New Testament and say, what did Jesus say to the people who brought him an apostate, to the people who brought him an infidel, and said, they must be killed or she must be killed? It's the woman caught in adultery, and he turned it back on them, and the woman was left with no accuser. Jesus does not sanction theologically motivated murder. So there are limits to that. On the other hand, you know, it's interesting how the details of this play itself out, this wideness in God's mercy. I've probably told some version of this story 1,000 times because it was constitutive of who Mike Mitchell was. Mike Mitchell became a Presbyterian when the Baptist kicked him out for opening a liquor store. It's not a whole lot more complicated than that. And fortunately for him, and I think fortunately for all of us, of all of those things that can cause Presbyterians to look askance one at another, and there are plenty of them, opening a liquor store is not on the list. I tell people, you find 4 Presbyterians, you find a 5th. That's just how it goes. So there's a wideness in God's mercy, like the wideness of the sea. And there is a place for those who need structure. There's a place for those who need wind beneath their wings. And it's useful to understand when things stop working for you, especially when they stop working when you busted it through some ethical or moral lapse, that the God who made you, who energized you even to be free to screw it up, has a level of wideness in God's mercy that will hold you long enough to recognize what you next need to move forward. Learn something about yourself, learn something about God. Learn something, period. There's an over-the-counter prescription for depression. It's called chocolate. One bite of chocolate, which gives you the energy to go learn something. Doesn't even matter. Go into Barnes & Noble, go into a library, pick the first book you see or the 99th one you see off the shelf, open it at random and read that paragraph. You've learned something at a base level that moves you forward. And here's what it does most profoundly, because every time you learn something, even if you learn something for sure, if it was worth learning, it raises more questions, which moves you forward. We had an article published a month or so ago that I thought had a pretty interesting set of paradoxical findings. It's starting to get a little media attention, and Karen McKay interviewed me a couple weeks ago for KCBD, and it'll be aired this Thursday at 10. And the article was about the relationship between escalating numbers of tattoos and well-being, lots of measures of well-being. And we only found two things that stood out. One was that women with four tattoos or more, I mean, we're talking about now becoming aficionados rather than simply dabblers, four or more tattoos among women connected to a higher level of self-esteem. That was interesting, not all that surprising, but parallel to that, we also found that that same group of four-plus tattooed women also reported a fourfold greater likelihood or history of having attempted suicide. Self-esteem, suicide attempt. That was the answer to the question, what's the relationship between escalating levels of tattoos and well-being, which raises about six more. We don't have the data to show it. It's on the list of next things to do. But when you learn something, you speculate about what you next need to know, and that's how you move forward. I think, and we wrote this in the article, and this is the main point of what's getting any media attention at all, is I think that women who have been through an emotional loss that may have led them to contemplating suicide or even attempting it may be doing with body art what we know women who've experienced a physical loss, let's say through breast cancer or something like that, they will often reclaim the lost physicality by adorning with body art. It's a way of taking ownership again of what was violated. So the logic of that, it would seem, perhaps, that especially women experiencing an emotional loss evidenced by a suicide attempt, may some choose escalating levels of body art to reclaim the emotional loss and to say, this is who I am now. I have no idea whether that's the case. We've never asked anybody that question. But because the logic holds up, I want to learn more, and that's the point. When it stops working, learn a little something about you. It's hard work. Relearn a little something about God. You might be surprised at the wideness in his mercy. And finally, just learn something. Because even when what has stopped working is a vocation, the vocational imperative is not in the job you might or might not still have. It's in the baptismal vow that doesn't change. We are called by God to connect what the world needs and what you can do, what the world still needs and what you can do next. The vocational imperative does not change. The devil's in the details. And there might need to be some learning for how to rearrange the details. But here's the point. As we seek to find a way to move forward when things have stopped working, as we've engaged some learning, it's never about the misstep or the tripping over our own 2 feet. It's never about the last step. It's always and only about the next step, supported by the grace of the one who calls us back, calls us forward, gives us strength, and finally peace. Amen.